This is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have a great show lined up for you. We will be talking to Rosemary Pierce about nutrient depletion in the first half of the show. And in the second half, we will be talking to Ida West about vaccine issues. But before we do that, here is Alan with the health news.
Growing up on a farm may help ward off allergies later in life, a new study suggests. The study also found that women who spend their early years on a farm typically have stronger lungs than their suburban or city-dwelling peers. Other research has suggested that exposure to germs and potential allergens in early childhood could protect people against allergies later. A team led by the University of Melbourne's Shiamali Domage put this hygiene hypothesis to the test. The team analyzed data from a survey of more than 10,000 adults in 14 countries in Europe, Scandinavia, and Australia. Nearly 64% said they spent their first 5 years of life in a rural village, small town, or city suburb. About 27% lived in the city, and about 9% grew up on a farm. Kids who spent their early years on a farm were more likely to have had pets and older brothers or sisters. These kids also were more likely to have shared a bedroom, but less likely to have had a close family member with allergies. The research was published online on September 26th in the journal Thorax. A now 5-month-old baby boy is the first worldwide to be born using a controversial technique that combines DNA from three people, two women and a man. As reported September 27th by New Scientist magazine, the technique is designed to help people who carry rare genetic mutations have healthy children. It has only been legally approved for use in the United Kingdom. According to the report, the boy was born to a Jordanian couple in which the woman carries genes for Leigh syndrome, a lethal nervous system disorder. The DNA for the illness resides in the cell's energy source, the mitochondria. Mitochondrial DNA is only passed down to children via mothers. The woman in this case was herself healthy, but had already had two children who later died of Leigh syndrome. So the couple turned to a team led by Dr. John Zhang at New Hope Fertility Center in New York City. Zhang had long been working on a three-parent method of conception called spindle nuclear transfer. In this method, doctors remove the nucleus from one of the mother's eggs and insert it into a donor egg that has had its own nucleus removed. Sometimes following up on a gut feeling can make the difference between life and death, especially for people with colon cancer, researchers report. People who pay attention to their digestive system are more likely to notice worrisome symptoms and seek medical attention sooner, said Dr. Amit Singhal and colleagues at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center in Dallas. And when colon cancer is caught early, it's usually easier to treat, Singhal explained. In a news release, he said the old saying, listen to your gut, holds true when it comes to your health. If you notice differences that persist more than a week, contact your physician. Singhal is a gastroenterologist and an associate professor of internal medicine and clinical services. Many conditions can cause digestive symptoms, but if it's cancer and you catch it early, you'll have a better prognosis, he added. Be aware of your family history and whether any of your relatives have had colon cancer, especially before age 50, he advised. Colorectal cancer is the third leading cause of cancer-related deaths in the United States when men and women are considered separately, and the second leading cause when both sexes are combined. People suffering from chronic ringing in the ear, called tinnitus, may find some relief by spraying the hormone oxytocin in their nose, a small initial study by Brazilian researchers suggests. Oxytocin, dubbed the love hormone because it promotes social connections, might also help relieve the annoying and sometimes disturbing noises of tinnitus. Oxytocin has actions in the brain and the ear that may help in tinnitus treatment and provide immediate relief, said lead researcher Dr. Andrea Azevedo. She is with the Department of Otolaryngology at the Universidade Federal de São Paulo. But at least one hearing specialist was unconvinced that oxytocin would help. And even Azevedo said it isn't clear how oxytocin might work to relieve tinnitus. She speculated that it may have an effect in the ear, probably related to fluid regulation in the inner ear, and a brain effect that may be related to the production of the neurotransmitter dopamine. The results of the study were scheduled to be presented recently at the meeting of the American Academy of Otolaryngology, Head and Neck Surgery in San Diego.
Rosemary Pierce is a holistic pharmacist with more than 40 years' experience in both conventional and natural medicine. Currently, she counsels and lectures on holistic health, mind and body vitality, as well as offering group workshops in community building. Rosemary's experience in holistic healing practices have been very extensive over her 40 years' experience. Rosemary, welcome.
Thank you, Kathy. Good to be with you.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about nutrient depletion. And drugs. So do all drugs deplete vital nutrients essential to your health?
Well, not quite all, Kathy. There are a number of categories I'd like to look at, but basically there are about 400 known drugs that actually have an effect on contributing to us not having those essential vitamins and minerals and other essential nutrients available. They affect them in some way. Either they stop them from being absorbed, they don't let them be metabolized, they help them to excrete too quickly. So not only, you know, are we concerned about the quality of our diet, but then if the quality of the diet is low and people are needing to take medication, that is like a double whammy. It's like more low nutrient levels will most likely be found. And often those effects show up creating the exact condition that you would be taking the drug for. For example, a drug that you might be taking to lower your blood pressure so that you protect your heart could deplete magnesium. We'll talk a little bit more about that. And magnesium is absolutely necessary for the health of our heart.
Okay. So what are the main categories of drugs that can cause nutrient depletion?
There are many categories, but there are a few ones that, you know, could be beneficial for us to take a look at. What I would like to state just before I do that is that this whole idea isn't something that is just thought up recently or, you know, has one study behind it. There's been four decades of research done and over 600 scientific papers behind this and more of what we're going to talk about. So it has been well-researched and documented and established that these particular nutrients we're going to talk about that are depleted by certain categories of drugs. And I think if we look at them in categories, it might be more helpful. So there are categories like, what do antibiotics do? What does the pill or estrogen hormonal replacement, you know, statin drugs are a big one. Blood pressure medications, as I mentioned. Anti-inflammatory drugs, which are not only prescription, but over-the-counter. And then the acid blockers, the prescription ones and the ones over-the-counter. So maybe we could, you know, quickly...
We could start going through those, yeah. Antibiotics. Everybody seems to be aware now that if you're on an antibiotic, you've got to do something else. What is it that you have to do?
Well, you have to replace the normal bacteria that you would find in your gut because it can affect it. It can either destroy it or upset the balance of how we would normally have this healthy bacteria. Now, this healthy bacteria not only keeps us, you know, out of having diarrhea and yeast infections and whatever, but they also produce vitamins. So from the fermentation of our normal bacteria, our normal flora, so a lot of people know it, actually produces vitamin Bs, folic acid, and vitamin K2. Now, I'd like to focus on vitamin K2 because a lot of people might not be aware that if they have to take antibiotics or have taken them, not only do they need to replace their normal flora by taking, probiotics, either live bacteria cultures or probiotic capsules, they also, it would be really advisable to also take a vitamin K2 supplement. Now, this is vitamin K2M7. This is a different vitamin K2 than what you find in leafy green vegetables. And this one does not, it's not about blood clotting it's not the vitamin K2. It's the vitamin K that keeps our arteries from being clogged with calcium. It helps utilize calcium and in the bones. It's absolutely necessary for a number of functions in the body. And And K2 now is available. Anybody that takes vitamin D, especially in those larger amounts, and a lot of people will do that as we move into the winter, K2 is a necessary addition.
Okay. What about all these ferments and fermented foods that people are eating? Is that going to help with antibiotics?
Yes. Yes. Matter of fact, as a young pharmacist, I got many hugs from moms when I told them to put their children on yogurt. And you can do the yogurt or the probiotic capsules or any other. Kefir is a great one. Sauerkraut, which you won't get into children so easily, but different types of fermented foods provide healthy bacteria. Even eating a carrot out of the garden when it's just been, you know, loosely washed and not every bit of dirt is off it, it just ties into the news report that you had that stronger lungs are found in women who've were born on farms. And a lot of it has to do with just exposure. We over-sterilize our environment. So many forms of getting these healthy bacteria in our body would support somebody who's had to take antibiotics or have taken it in the past.
Okay, so if we have to take antibiotics, do we start the probiotics at the same time as the antibiotic, or do we wait until we've finished our dose of antibiotics before we jump into the probiotic?
I have always been a proponent of taking them simultaneously, not directly at the same time, but during the same days. Like, if you have to start an antibiotic and haven't been on a probiotic, get one and take it in between. And continue post, and also do the different types of foods. That's a very good question, and it went through my mind. I'm glad you brought it up, because a lot of people think, oh, it's a waste. Well, you might be losing some of those healthy bacteria that are coming in, but at least you're reculturing continuously your digestive tract.
Okay. Next one, would you like to go to the pill or the HRT?
Estrogen supplementation.
Yes.
Either in the form of the birth control pill, oral contraceptive, or in HRT, hormonal replacement therapy, or even ERT, estrogen replacement therapy. And it doesn't matter with those whether they're the bioidentical hormones or the synthetic mare's urine, you know, any form. Doesn't matter if it would be a patch or orally taken. All estrogen coming in the body is going to cause a depletion. And all estrogen will deplete magnesium, B6, and zinc. And oral contraceptives will affect the rest of the Bs, including folic acid, vitamin C, even the mineral selenium. And all of these are absolutely necessary for health and prevention of disease such as cancers. And, they're very important for our body. And if we think of somebody taking oral contraceptive, they're doing it for years, sometimes for decades. So if they're not supplementing, at least with a multivitamin, if not also with a supplement of a CalMag, general supplement, and then extra zinc. So let's look at the magnesium, B6, and zinc.
Mm-hmm.
Those three together, they have many roles in the body. Zinc and magnesium have 300 to 400 different jobs that they have to do in our body to help keep us healthy. But together, those three are responsible for warding off inflammation by properly allowing our essential fatty acids to be utilized in the body. So our essential fatty acids that we get from our food or our omega-3 supplements, for example, are things like nuts and seeds and leafy greens. They have to go through certain chemical changes, and they need cofactors. Magnesium, B6, and zinc are the cofactors. If they're not there, they move into prostaglandins that are inflammatory. So they actually produce inflammation. And that inflammation is often, if we think about women who are using these supplements or these drugs and then not supplementing, and they might get, even on the pill, you might get a very painful period or inflammation in the body in many different forms. That inflammation, all the PMS symptoms are related to inflammation.
What happens when women go into menopause and start to get achy joints and achy, you know, arthritis-y type problems, but through the menopause years? Mm-hmm. Is that related to that as well?
Yes, it can be, because if they've either been on supplements or if they've gone through hormonal fluctuation, there is a component to estrogen dominance, which happens, you know, pre-menopause, before you actually drop the levels of estrogen, inflammation in different areas, because estrogen has receptor sites through the whole body. Sometimes it's even memory loss. But dealing with inflammation is a big factor, and magnesium, B6, and zinc absolutely necessary to keep to support the body. And of course, there are many other things to be done to support a female through that, relieving mm-hmm. constipation, the health of the whole digestive tract, removing stress or dealing with stress in a more healthy way, building the adrenals. But this magnesium, B6, and zinc, as a combination, works both to produce, and it does another thing, it actually helps the body produce progesterone.
Okay. Rosemary, we're going to have to take a quick break, and then we're going to get right back to you, and we're going to talk some more about nutrient depletion and pharmaceutical drugs.